from KFNX News Talk Radio 1100, it's Chatterbox, where you'll find the latest news, interviews, and updates about the gaming world. The views and opinions expressed are those of the host, the guests, and the callers only, and not necessarily those of KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. And now here's your hosts for Chatterbox.
That's right, here are your hosts for Chatterbox Video Game Radio. My name's Alon.
And my name's Ara.
Now, Rich isn't in the studio yet. Maybe he'll be here a little bit later, but we're going to start the show anyway. If you weren't aware, we have a weekly radio talk show, and we talk about the video game industry. You can go to our website at chatterboxgameshow.com, or just chatterboxers.com if that's easier for you. Of course, you can also email Ara and myself at Ara or Alon at chatterboxgameshow.com.
Two different addresses.
Of course.
Don't just type in Alon or Alon.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
We should have like another address that actually gets those, so it sends them back like really
I get everything.
Violent emails.
Yeah. Anything at Chatterbox Game Show will go to me. It's pretty neat stuff. So before we start, of course, I want to remind everyone that we're going to be at the Penny Arcade Expo in just like a week and a half.
And I'll be supervising remotely.
Of course, since you won't actually be there in person, but I will be. And I'll be running the Family Feud PAX edition there. That's going to be Sunday morning at 11 a.m. I guess if you look at the schedule online at PennyArcadeExpo.com, it shows that they're going to have a line forming at 10 a.m. That's how big this event is. It starts the day in the main hall on Sunday, and the Omegathon comes on after the Penny Arcade panel, which happens after my Family Feud gig. So it's going to be a lot of good times. People have submitted a few questions like I asked them to, potential Family Feud PAX edition questions. I got to admit, I have not been terribly impressed with them thus far. They're specific to certain games or just things I don't find so interesting. Like,
I thought we had a legion of video game geeks behind us. What's going on?
Perhaps they're not as creative as I thought. I don't know. The answers they give when I give the surveys for Family Feud are
right.
Very interesting. But when I ask for questions up front, I don't know. You guys could do a little bit better. So keep them coming if you have some more ideas. Just try to make them general because they need to appeal to a whole audience. So not like specific questions about Halo or something like that.
Maybe questions about Mudkip, perhaps too specific.
I hear you like Mudkips.
Yeah.
I wish Rich were here.
You should totally have that question and be like, okay, top five answers on the board. What are they?
You mean my question would just be, do you like Mudkips?
No, just say I heard you like Mudkips to make it even more surreal.
Okay.
And then have people guess what someone's reaction would be.
And if you were there, perhaps you would do that. But since you're not going to be there.
I got to man the remote stations.
You know. All right. Well,
it's very busy.
Last week, while you were gone, and it was just Rich and myself, we talked a lot about Braid.
I trust that you behaved.
Definitely. And talked a lot about Braid.
Talk about me?
In your absence. I had to not talk too much about it because Rich hadn't played it. But, of course, he's played it by now.
No, did you talk about me, though?
No. And
trying to make you look like a fool?
Rich was utterly amazed by the game, just as I thought he would be. And then I went over to his place and I showed
really?
Him... I showed him one of the many stars that you can get, the one that I find most enjoyable.
I'm surprised that Rich was impressed by Braid.
Dude, it's awesome, and he loved it.
Because he doesn't seem to have, how should I put this nicely, much of a taste for the classical style of game.
I think he appreciates interesting gameplay, though.
Well, I'm glad that he does.
Bunch,
I just hear about, you know, him getting into all these, you know, 3D shooters featuring cities of rubble all the time. So I'm just like, all right, well, I know what he's all about.
Wow. No, he did like it. So you finally got a chance to play it as well.
Yes.
Of course, a little bit too chintzy to go for the whole game. As I understand, you went for just the demo.
I have to be Armenian. This is what I have to be.
I wasn't making that point, but I certainly would like
no,
to see
but
you.
I was.
Now, I have issues with digital distribution. In fact, the only reason I bought this game was because the lady of the house pretty much demanded it, because she's a big fan of John Blow's. But I was very
really?
Happy.
Really? She knows about John Blow?
Well, because she went to the Game Developers Conference and saw him talk, and that was the first talk she went to.
Oh, and, right.
And was just amazed at what he had to say. So when I told her, hey, there's this game of his, she's like, wait a minute, I saw that at GDC. And
yeah.
Was very excited. So she basically threw $15 in my face, made me buy it. I said, okay, fine.
That's fantastic.
And bought it, even though I still hate,
I would definitely buy it under those circumstances.
Yeah, well, I still hate the idea of digital distribution with essentially every fiber of my body.
Yes.
But what can
as,
I do?
As do I, but, you know.
It was still worth the download, even if I had to pay for it. So I'm curious to hear what you think of it now that you got the chance to play. And you're generally the most critical of the bunch. And Rich.
Yes.
Rich, who finally stepped in.
And by the bunch, we usually.
Temporary tattoos!
We usually mean, like, all of gamerhood. But I digress.
So I was asking our.
How do you like those temporary tattoos, dude? That's a.
Dude, awesome!
Yeah, courtesy of the game truck.
All right.
That's
so I heard you like
Mudkip,
Sara.
No, okay. I don't.
No better way to get off track than let Rich into the studio.
I'm here.
Okay.
All right. All right.
Continue.
We've got a couple more minutes before the break. So, all right, tell me what you thought about Braid.
So I will tell you guys my impressions of my experience of the very, very first few moments of the game, because I think that those are really the most important. And I noticed some things that you don't really see that much in games. And it's subtle, but I hope that you guys will see what I'm talking about. Right? So the first cool thing is, like, okay, you're starting, right? The title screen is the first screen in the game. It's not like press start to play. You know, like, your character is just right there on the screen.
I had an interesting thought when I noticed that.
Very, very, very cool. That's very, very cool. The other thing is that it's not apparent that that's going on because everything's in silhouette. So until you actually, jockey around with the controller, you realize, oh, I'm playing. Oh, okay, this is cool, right? So the next moment, right, when you start walking across the screen and you've got, like, this cool, you know, painted silhouette-looking background and foreground, and the help text shows up on the screen, right?
Yes, which I'm sure killed John a little bit inside, because it's clear that he did his best to avoid.
No. Listen to this. This is, like, this kind of subtlety is what really I just have to share with everybody. This is really awesome. And this is the kind of thing that you can only really get from, I think, somebody being, you know, the designer and the programmer all at the same time, which he is.
Yeah.
So, you know, the text that shows up on the screen is actually framed very nicely in one of the contours of the bridge that you're following.
Notice okay? that, yeah.
Yeah. And then one of the messages that it says is, oh, you know, press start to see the menu if you want. You know, it's not verbatim, but basically that's the gist of it.
Okay.
You know, which is cool, too, because I've never seen help text ever tell me something like, okay, if you want to do this now, you can. It's always just stoic, like, you know, press start to see your items, you know. And, I mean, just it's a very, very subtle change. Like, all this stuff is very, very subtle that I'm explaining to you. But these kind of little tiny details, like, this is what makes a good game design. This that I'm explaining to all you guys is, at least for me, a metaphor for just good game design in general when you apply it to, you know, the whole game, not just the first couple screens. But this kind of thing, like, those things matter, you know? They're even just, like, little, like, presentation-y metagame things that don't necessarily have to do with the game, but it matters.
Yeah.
It matters, and even if you don't notice it explicitly, I think that...
It gives you an immediate introduction to the artistic nature of the game.
Yeah, it's artistic. It's artistic, and it complements, you know, the design. It complements what's going on. It's not, you know, if you had an art guy and a design guy, and the art guy was like, oh, I got to put, you know, this text on the screen. I'm going to design this text to go on the screen. And the design guy's like, okay, the game's going to play this way, right? Unless both of them, like, have, like, a mind meld or something, you're not going to get these really interesting kinds of combinations, like, you know, the help text, you know, framed against background graphics specifically, because you need to have, like, one person actually think of those things as a whole in order to have that idea to do that. So that's what I thought was awesome about it. The first two screens.
And since you were only playing the demo, you didn't really get the chance to play the more advanced levels where there was actually interesting gameplay.
No, but I did. I played the whole demo. I extracted all of the interaction out of it.
How many levels does it let you play in the demo? World 1 and World 2?
The 1 and part of 2 and actually, like, part of 3. But I did everything I could possibly do. So now I consider myself fully qualified to...
Not at all.
To make all kinds of judgments about the
game. Not at all. You need to come play the whole game someday. Anyway, we'll be back after the break. Maybe I'll tell Aura a little bit more of the exciting nature of this game.
You're listening to Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio, and we're talking about Braid.
We're talking about more than Braid. We're talking about inspiration. We're talking about fantastic design and art and gameplay.
Are you inspired? Are you inspired to do something great now?
Yeah, and you know what I would want to do if I were truly inspired? So I would want to learn how to make these games by going to UAT, the University of Advanced Technology. And you can learn more about that school at uat.edu. Isn't that right, Rich?
Temporary tattoos.
I'm equally...
You're putting it on with Rich sauce?
Disturbed and repulsed by Rich's revealing of his naked shoulder.
All right, yum. So moving right along. You said, one thing you said about Braid was that when it starts, you're actually in the game. Like the screen is actually the game. And it's funny because I noticed that too, and I thought back to the one game I've ever made, which was made with a friend of mine at a game camp at that school.
And you did that by Nintendo, right? You did that.
Honestly, we did it because it was easier to do that than not to do that.
Yeah.
Like the menu screen. We still had a menu screen.
So
like
John Blow, he stole your idea,
What I'm saying
is... You should write him a cease and desist order.
You probably wouldn't have known playing our game because it was still a menu screen, but like we had this little pogo chicken, right?
Yeah.
Chicken on a pogo stick, right? And he had to roll around and whatever.
It's fantastic.
Rolling with a pogo stick is interesting, right? So... Anyway, so there was still a menu screen, and you had to choose, but the way you chose was, like, putting the chicken next to the appropriate word.
No, that's
And the
that's
engine
cool.
was running in the background yes. as if it were a level. It's just that the graphic on the screen was a more bland graphic
they,
than an actual
They don't
world.
Do that enough. You know, that like that reminds me of, like, you know, 80s NES Skate or Die, where the menu is not a menu. It's this little, like, top view kind of, like... Bizarre.
Are you talking about 720 in the arcade or the
The Nintendo Skate or Die, where you just skate around on this screen and that's how you go to the different levels. You don't select from the menu.
Yeah. And I mean, people have done that a lot. You've actually complained that EA does that with their racing games, right? Need for Speed Underground did that and you didn't like it?
Well, no. I don't complain because of it doing something intrinsic to that type of interface. I complain because instead of, you know, moving across the screen... To get somewhere, you have to travel 20 miles.
Wasted time.
Though. So, yeah, it's just a little subtle detail there. You know?
It's right. Really well done in Braid, though.
So, anyway, yeah, I was reminded of the fact that we did that, sort of, and the reason we did it was just because it was easier to do that than anything else. All right, so anyway, yes, the game is fantastic. It's fantastic beyond just the limitations of the demo, though.
I mean, I'm really impressed by it. I have some doubts and reservations because of my perception of what the game is going to shape up to be, which, you know, of course, may or may not be really reality.
In World 5 and World 6, there are elements that are very different than what you found in World 2, 3, and 4.
I cannot figure out World 5. That game mechanic just doesn't make sense to me. That's World 5 is with the orb where the time slows down inside
the orb.
No, that's
World 6.
Is that World 6?
Okay. It is the fifth world, which is titled World 6.
Doesn't make sense to me.
That's, like, that one's pretty easy to understand.
I can't figure it out. I've gotten like two puzzle pieces out of all of them. I've gone through and be like, okay, I don't know how to get that, and I skip it.
All right, so what he's describing is the gameplay mechanic, like each world has a different mechanic. And so in World 5, and I said before, like the fifth world is World 6 because you start on World 2 and then 3 and 4 and 5 and 6. All right, so in World 5... If you
do start in World 2.
Yeah. If you reverse time...
It's like the Phoenix Airport.
So let's say you reverse time for 3 seconds. Then whatever you did in those 3 seconds that you reverse time, whatever you had done prior to reversing the time, right? This little shadow version of yourself goes out.
No, not that.
I know. Hang on. I'm just explaining the concept of a mechanic per world.
Gotcha.
So in World 5...
Because that one is awesome.
Yeah. Let's say you move forward in time 10 seconds doing stuff.
So something different happens in every world?
Yes.
It's a different mechanic.
Is it strictly like on a per world basis? Because I was a little confused about how...
Well, you can reverse time in all of them.
Right. No. But what I mean is one thing that confused me, which I'm kind of curious how they handle... is when I was going and, you know, playing those three levels or whatever, it wasn't really apparent to me, like, why the rules changed at one point and how they were changing, and it seemed a little bit inconsistent to me.
Yeah, I can see why you would think that, because they don't explain this world is different. But you could see when you went to World 4 that
level.
As you move forward, well, that's the training
ground.
I know.
How do you not get that?
Well, it's just that nothing expressly said each world will have a different mechanic, right?
No, but it's like, here's a pit level. Oh, I can do this thing. And then it's like, you go to the next one, you're like, oh, this thing is covered with green sparklies, and it works this way.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong.
So this is the new mechanic.
Some aspects that are new are certainly immediately observable and understandable.
Yeah.
And then that's good. But one thing that kind of like was a little weird to me was, and I was prepared for this because somebody already told me basically, but the thing about like, oh, you know, some things, and I think it was actually you last time that told me that, like some things don't, when you reverse time, right? Like some things don't actually, aren't actually, how should I put it?
They aren't susceptible to the reversal
right,
time.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Like the key, right? But in the first world, the key is susceptible.
Yeah. Well, it's not the key. It's whether or not the key is surrounded in green.
It's not surrounded
stardust
by sparkles.
Like
okay.
I think their stardust is
so
a little too small.
The sparkles. Lesson that you learn in world two is that green stuff, or maybe it was world three, but things that are enshrouded in green are not subjected to the reversal of time.
I know why you couldn't figure it out. It's because you're playing it on like a really old CRT monitor through a VGA cable.
No, actually, for your
information, were you playing on your new monitor?
I was playing it on my new monitor.
How's the new monitor?
And for computer stuff, it's awesome.
Yeah.
But dude, I'd take that CRT any day.
What?
For Xbox?
Are
absolutely.
You going through VGA or do you have like HDMI? You don't have HDMI on your
All right,
Xbox,
hey, guys.
We're way off topic.
We've got break to talk about that stuff. So, getting back to Braid here. To explain to the audience and to you, World 5 has this mechanic where if you reverse time for a few seconds, then whatever you had done from the time that you stopped reversing time to when you started, like, is done again by this shadow character, and then you're mm-hmm. free to do something else. So essentially, you can have a teammate go do something for you by doing it and then reversing time, and then he does what you did.
Record your action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which right. is very helpful, and it creates very interesting dynamics in the game.
Especially when you have to do it.
World 6, you very simply just you lay this ring that has a diameter that's perfectly defined in the screen, right? Let's say 3 inches on a relatively normal sized TV, right? Within
sure.
within that ring, everything moves really, really slowly. And then the further you get away from that ring, things can move faster. So if there's an enemy walking near your ring, then he's going to go very slowly, but something might catch up to him. If there are several enemies walking,
yeah.
they might catch up because they go fast until they hit the ring, at which point they move slowly.
Yeah.
And I don't know why you can't grasp
that. I understand what the ring does. I understand that the closer you get to that ring, the slower you move. And then when you're inside the ring is the slowest point. But like in those levels, like I can't understand how to utilize that tool to get the puzzle piece. I think the only puzzle piece
Maybe that's
because
you dropped out of school.
The only puzzle piece that made sense.
Truth hurts.
That wasn't just, jump it. There was like one that was just like jump and get the puzzle piece. And it was really easy. It was like you had to put the ring to slow down the thing that moved down that had the green sparklies on it. Like you have to trip a lever, but you have to slow one of the blocks that moves so you can lay it over in another spot so that when you drop the ladder drops slowly so you can jump up on the ladder as it's falling down
yeah,
and run up and get the piece.
I
was like, oh, that was
gap.
Cool. But then I can't figure any other
You didn't
puzzles.
Get the puzzle piece next to the ladder, though.
Yeah, I got the puzzle piece where the ladder fell down.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that was the last puzzle piece I got in the whole
that
game.
That was the easiest one. That's the one that made sense to me. And I was like, okay, I need to put the thing here so the ladder falls slowly, and I'll be immune because I'm covered in green sparklies, and then I can run up the ladder as it's falling slowly, but I'll be running up at full speed. And I got it. I was like, sweet. And then I'm like, how do I get that puzzle piece over there? And it didn't make sense
to me. The one in the
top
right was
yeah,
way easier.
Yeah, it didn't make... How? It's not possible. There's nothing to jump on to get there.
Oh, you're a dumbass.
Obviously right. not, because I got the hard one, apparently.
All right. Well, while you guys were...
Basically,
there's
this game's amazing.
Level, by the way.
So excitedly rambling.
Dude, this game's so awesome.
It just dawned on me, and I really have to say that I hate this... I hate how we're just like gushing with praise, like come on, but I'm going to do it even more. And
this game is awesome.
The thing that's really, I think, really genius about, at least on the superficial side of it, the mechanic, is that I think that John Bull has really come up with a incredibly elegant way of dealing with the... The fatigue that sets in when you have to redo stuff.
Oh, that's something
in-game.
We talked about too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It doesn't suck to have to try something again.
No, and not only that, it's like since you can reverse the time so readily and so easily and it doesn't cost anything to do it,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, I really love how I can just kind of, you know, oh, I ran into something. Okay, I'm just going to back up, you know, half a second.
Yeah. Yep. No, that's something we talked about. It's like, I hate repetition in games, but this way, it presents you with a very difficult...
The way the game's structured, it's not cheating. It's fine.
It presents you with a very difficult challenge, but says, don't worry, you can try this as much as you want.
Yeah.
For the most part. There are a couple times when you can't do that.
And it's nice. You can, like, close that iteration loop like crazy, like as small as it could ever be in a game.
All right. We're going to talk about different things, I promise, when we get back after the break.
Hey, it's me, Mario. You're listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. It's a number one. Woohoo!
Man, all we are talking about over the break is how to do braid stuff. But we promise, promise we're going to move on.
Wait, we're not
I had more things to say about braid, actually.
Why can't we talk about braid more?
That do not involve describing boring mechanics over the air.
All right, can I give you 60 seconds? Is that fair?
No, but I'll take them.
All right, 60 seconds, go.
All right. Well, so I found some funny things about it just, you know, searching online, right? First of all, people are complaining that this is like $15 is too much.
What?
Yeah, a lot of people are
upset with
the price.
Which goes to show people will complain about everything on the internet. And also, even with my cheapness, I don't think that that's too much. Like, I mean, I don't know if I'll buy it, but I don't think it's too much.
I'll probably buy it again, to be honest.
Okay, so going on.
Because it's not in my
funny quote.
Anyways.
A funny quote in the IGN review of the game. They say, it's a puzzle game. No, they don't say that. This is what they say. They say... If only the experience lasted a little longer and there weren't as many puzzles with singular solutions.
What?
I find this comment to be like so typical.
Isn't that the point of a puzzle?
Of the retarded games media.
I see what you're trying.
Okay. Because first thing is, it's good. It's good. So, I wish there was more of it. Like, okay, that's really observant. And then the other one is, and this is like, I had to actually figure out the solution to the puzzle, which was hard, and I don't like that. I want the easy way out too. What it says.
I think
to
what he's saying is that he didn't want such linearity, or
that's a puzzle game.
No,
puzzles have single solutions. To
I
them.
Think one thing that I can see about this game, one kind of like difficulty.
You've exceeded your 60 seconds.
I know.
I don't
know.
Care.
I'm
We're
greedy.
Gonna continue talking about this.
I'm greedy.
This expands to just puzzle games.
I'm
in
trying
general.
To talk here, buddy.
Continue.
All right.
I'm encouraging you. I'm sorry.
Is that you know a lot of the when I'm trying to like figure out even like some of the easier puzzles, and I'm sure it'll just get worse, right? There's one thing that's kind of like. I should say, I don't know, a little uncomfortable about an action game where you're basically, it's not really an action game, right? The mechanics are action, but it's essentially a puzzle game. You have to just look at the puzzle for a while sometimes to figure out what to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it requires no interaction on your part. You just have to just observe and think and sometimes think really hard and sometimes be stuck for a while.
Think.
Maybe you'll figure it out. And while you're thinking, you're like, how the F am I going to think of this solution? Maybe there's an invisible wall somewhere or a box that jumps out of, you know, the sky or something.
Mm-hmm.
So that aspect of it, I think, in games is really, I think for a lot of players who are accustomed to action, and even me to degrees, is really uncomfortable. You know, we don't like that. We like the action to keep going. But we need to sit down and like look at it and figure it out.
I actually did have a problem with some parts of the game, some very small elements, but they certainly don't make me not like the game anymore.
I think the only complaint I can come up with is that I just don't get some of the puzzles. Like, I look at it and just go, I have no idea.
That's just because you're dumb.
But no, it's not a complaint. I'm just saying, like, man, I'm dumb. I can't figure this out.
There are a couple times where the rules that you learn are essentially broken. Like, there's an enemy that comes out of a certain pipe, but if you reverse time in a certain way, then... He will go back. Well, there's a world where all time is reversed. It's naturally traveling in reverse.
Right.
So, whoa. Like, an enemy who fell off the screen is going reverse and going back into the cannon that he came from.
Oh.
But if you prevent him from going into that one and force him to take a different path, then he'll suddenly have come out of a different canon, and he'll travel back into that canon, and you have to ride him as he goes up the canon. That bothers me, that under one condition he does this thing,
right,
and then you change something and it changes his origin.
I can see that.
Anyway.
So are you forwarding time?
I mean, it can be a really big mess when you don't feel like the rules of the world, however intricate, are actually inconsistent.
Well, and there's another part where, like, there's only one enemy on screen, and once you kill him, he comes out of the canon again. And then if you do something very specific and special, then now suddenly you're allowed to have two enemies on the screen.
Uh-huh.
You saw that with the special star.
Yeah.
But that's a single secret element, where if you get him up there, then at least...
Yeah.
Anyway.
But the complaint that you should be able to solve puzzles in multiple ways, I think, is just obnoxious.
No, I think it's typical reviewer...
I think it's obnoxious.
Non-complaint complaints.
I like the idea of solving things in different ways, but as it relates to this game,
I mean, it's like saying the puzzles in Professor Layton. No,
it's like eating a chocolate bar and complaining that it's not peanut butter. That's what it is.
Do you have any idea how many more seconds than 60 seconds we've used on this?
Yeah,
it was worth it.
All right, well, Penn called in, and I fear that he's calling in specifically to tell us to stop talking about this topic, because he doesn't like it. He doesn't like Braid.
What?
He doesn't like it. Let's bring Penn on.
Penn.
And maybe we'll hear his argument for why Braid isn't fantastic. Penn, you're on the air.
I'm just not into puzzle games. It has nothing to do with Braid itself.
Here's
What's
my
up,
response.
Penn? So you're saying you're racist?
No, I'm saying, Penn, you're wrong.
Genreist, I think, is the appropriate
It's not term. A matter of opinion. You're just wrong.
All right. Well, I called about the game price thingy, and I think that a lot of people use the example of, well, you go to the movie theater, and after gas and the movie ticket and popcorn, you basically spent about the same $15 as you would for a game.
Yeah.
But I doubt that people are going to the movies to see a mediocre movie. They're usually trying to see the best movie that there is. They're not going out there and kind of, oh, I'm just going to watch, you know, just some dumb movie that came out randomly. Like, they specifically choose what they're going to spend their money on carefully. And with a lot of these downloadable games, the game's just, yeah, it's a couple of hours of fun, but...
But you know what you're getting. You even have a better idea of what you're getting than you do with the film.
Oh, I agree, but the expectation for games is sort of very different, because especially with, if you happen to own a Wii, you can get Super Mario Brothers 3, which is one of the greatest games ever made, for like, well, actually, I don't know if it came out on the Wii Virtual Console.
Let's
but
just
as
pretend
an example,
it did.
Yeah, it would be a much better choice than Braid, because Super Mario Brothers 3 is an amazing game, even by today's standards. While Braid does do some very clever things, like I can see why people enjoy Braid. I'm just personally not into puzzle games.
Okay, I have an interesting quote.
Super Mario
Hold
3.
Hold on. I'm going to interject this real quick. I have a really interesting quote that I saw on a message board that I want to relay to all of you guys that's very relevant right now. And maybe this will be interesting.
Quote.
It's a puzzle game with a platformer aesthetic, and the average gamer can't handle it not being a great platformer.
Okay. I think one of the kind of on like that, one of the analogies, I don't know if analogy is the right word, the person said it was just how Portal is a puzzle game in an FPS shoes. Braid is a puzzle game in platforming shoes.
Right.
So it's basically – it was a different source though. But yeah, basically the same concept.
But Portal is like one of the best looking and well-written games ever made, while Braid –
And it had
not
great
so
puzzle
much.
Aspects.
So hold on. Now you're confusing me, Penn, because on the one hand you're saying – Well, I just don't like puzzle games, which is perfectly valid.
But you like...
Hold on.
Okay.
But then on the other hand, you seem to be inferring that there's something intrinsic to Braid that just makes it not a good game. Because I don't like the type of game Portal is, like, which is actually my opinion on Portal. I think that Portal is a fantastic achievement in so many directions, but it's not my style of game, so I'm not into it. But then you're saying that, like, well, Portal's awesome and this one's not awesome. So is it just – which one is it?
Well, with Portal, there, even though I'm not – I'll say that I don't have Portal, so I am being consistent in what I say about not liking puzzle games. But Portal has humor attached to it. And that sort of is like, well, I'll play a game that maybe is not in a genre I care about if it has an element that I'm sort of interested in, which is you don't play a lot of games with humor unless you play those, you know, old school games like Sam and Max and stuff like that.
Right. No, but what I'm asking from you is, can you articulate what is bad about Braid other than it's just not your cup of tea? Or that, basically, maybe we'll hear some of that when we come back from the break.
Stay on the line. We'll be back.
Welcome back, guys. It's Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Hopefully we still have Penn on the line. Are you still on?
Yes, I'm here.
We do have Penn, but we certainly broke my rule about not talking about one topic for the entire show again.
Well,
yeah.
I thought it was a silly rule, although we can go into like another topic for the last 5 minutes.
All right, well, I'm sure if I told you we only have 60 seconds for another topic, it's not going to matter anyway, so why bother? Right?
There you go.
All right, so Penn, I believe that Ara was asking you a question. If you could give a little bit more explanation for what you think is bad about the game, if there really is something you don't like, besides the fact that it's just a puzzle game that you generally don't enjoy.
Well, also, there's a huge element that, for me, is why I play games, which is the element of losing. You can't lose in Braid.
Oh, you can lose, my friend.
You know what's really interesting, actually? Well, I don't know how you can lose, but the thing that I found was really fascinating is that, yes, you can't lose, but the game, at least for me, was structured in a way where it's not like you can't lose anymore. It's that the concept of losing and redoing something is now irrelevant.
Let me tell you how you lose.
But I'd like to know also.
You lose by banging your head against your palm or your table repeatedly when you're forced to finish the level and move on without having gotten all the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
That's how you lose. You
but
lose
that's
by
not
completing.
That's just...
It's a different type of losing.
That's not dying.
You're just not,
but it is losing.
You are losing.
Fine, then. I like the element of dying.
Okay. Well, then you're weird.
You can also die repeatedly in this game. However, you are freely able to reverse it.
Yeah, you can die a lot.
Just like you can die in Soul Calibur and just play again.
You can actually die...
Desktop Tower Defense, and I actually play that like a puzzle game. And because while I was thinking about it, me not liking puzzle games, I was like, but I play Desktop Tower Defense all the time. And the reason is because... you can lose. There is a battle happening. Like games where there's no consequence and no loss just become boring.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Tetris. How do you lose in Tetris?
And that's why I don't like Tetris.
You do lose in Tetris.
By failing.
You let the blocks go all the
and
way up to the top of the screen.
Yeah, in other words,
you're going against yourself, which at some point that just gets boring.
You're not against yourself. You're against the developer.
Well,
like a puzzle game, I think.
No.
Like Geometry Wars.
You're trying to figure out this puzzle that the developer set up, and like beating that puzzle, I think is rewarding.
Yeah, I think what this comes down to is that
winning that puzzle is losing.
Penn has always said that he appreciates challenge in games, and I think part of challenge is the realization that you could fail completely, like in an express
way. Right, but not necessarily, right? Because there's And see, here's the thing. There's like, I don't know. Keep saying what you were saying.
I just think Penn isn't smart enough to play puzzle games.
And also,
I went there.
The fact that Portal is a first-person game makes it interesting because when I get this weird feeling when I look, you know, over the edge of a high building,
like the feeling like you want to jump off. Feeling it.
Well, no, just I'm in danger. And I actually get that same feeling in first-person shooters. Well, well-made first-person shooters.
So the game feels too safe to you?
Huh?
Is that part of its lack of appeal for you? Does Braid feel too safe to you?
Yeah, it feels completely safe. Anything that I do, you just hit a magic button and it's fixed, then you try again.
It's not a magic button, it's the X button.
Which literally reverses time, making it magic.
No, I mean, I can see where you're coming from, although, I don't get that feeling at all.
I like the feeling of safe.
It's like there's some things. I mean, I can understand that there's like you know, it's a different type of challenge. I mean, that's all it is, right? There's definitely – what I was going to say before I had a little brain fart was that just the – because there isn't a chance for you to fail does not necessarily diminish the challenge of what you're trying to figure out. But what it does do is it does kind of like necessarily change the structure of what the challenges are like. And so I could see that if you don't like those types of challenges, right? Like when you get one of those puzzles, like a, you know, not like a Rubik's Cube, but I guess like that, you know, one of those things are like the ropes and, you know, the chain inside the ring mm-hmm. or whatever, right? There's no failing that, right? It's just try it until you get it.
The failure is in the frustration of not being able to figure it out.
Right, right. So it's like, to me, it's a different kind of paradigm, but I can see how if you're so used to a certain kind of structure that once you see something that's just a completely different structure that you can, I don't know, it looks like crap, I guess.
Because I do understand that Braid is a high-quality title, and the things that they do in the game are clever, but it's sort of like not making, you know, my brain fire up with excitement. I'm just kind of like, I finished it, and then yeah. I deleted it.
No. I agree. I mean, there's certain things that there are certain neurons that Braid will never activate. That's for sure. It's not going to activate the Rock Band neurons.
No flow, basically.
So would Braid be a lot better if, like, things came out of nowhere and killed you and you had to start completely over?
Yep. That's why I suffered through the Ninja Gaiden trilogy and the new Ninja Gaiden games, because everything kills you.
Everything.
And actually, if you play the original Ninja Gaiden, it's sort of like a puzzle in that, hey, here's a jump, but an enemy appears just as you jump. And you have
so
to
you
figure
die.
Out, how do I do this jump without getting killed by a random bird?
So you like deadly puzzles.
Yeah.
Exactly. I like puzzles of death.
See, those are the
like Indiana
puzzles
Jones.
That annoy me. Like, I know exactly what you're talking about in Ninja Gaiden, and you're like, you just like, oh, I'm going to make a jump, and then it's like, and I died.
Yeah, but the
and
annoying part to that is that sometimes you have to
start
traverse
over.
Yeah, you have to traverse
beginning.
Through 6 minutes of game to get to that one spot
yeah,
where you screw
you
up once and you're done.
And
you gotta
it happens,
do it again.
And it happens in a fourth of a second. You're just like, what just flew out of nowhere and killed me? What the heck? And then you have to do it again. You're like, I just died again. Why is this thing killing me? And that's frustrating to me. And I guess Penn likes that.
Yeah.
I don't like it anymore. I liked it when I was younger.
Okay.
Now I prefer my games to be tough but fair. Sort of like Contra. If you play Super Contra, it's tough, but it's still absolutely doable. Like, there aren't that many cheap deaths. And once you memorize the, like, maybe two or three cheap deaths in a level, then you could finish it every time.
Yeah, see, but this is what fascinates me about Braid so much, is because it's almost as if, because of the way that they've implemented the rolling back time thing, the most unfair, cheapest type of thing you could ever encounter is now suddenly fair. I think that's cool.
Yeah, I think that's great, too.
I love Braid. I love Lamp.
I just really wish that we didn't.
It was worth it.
It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's
right.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you for calling. Appreciate it,
We could
Penn.
Talk about Mudkips for 5 minutes.
All right, though.
We could. What I'm going to talk about is my wish to remind everyone to check out uat.edu to learn about the University of Advancing Technology, because I had not done that again.
Yes, I was trying to find a way to weave that in and remind you, and we could be all smooth, but that'll save for
don't worry.
Why are you wearing that T-shirt, Ara?
What?
By the way?
G4.
I was going to try to not mention it, but
why?
Like, yeah.
Because like when I used to work for Tips and Tricks, there's some people visited us, and they're like, we got these four T-shirts from G4. You guys want them? And they're like, yeah, I like those T-shirts. I'll take them.
All right, that's legit.
This is fine American Apparel wear.
All right,
so you got that when G4 wasn't complete crap.
All right, moving right along. We have a guest next week.
Yes.
We don't have much more time in this show, but we can talk about the guest that will be on
I think that would be a fantastic idea.
We're going to talk about another Xbox Live Arcade game.
Oh.
Yes.
One that you two are big fans of.
And we're very impressed by. And
Schizoid,
what? Maybe.
Right?
Yeah. Oh! You say Schizoid, I say Schizoid. You
it's
know.
Schizoid.
Because
it has
to
be.
Talk about schizophrenia.
I don't make up.
Dude, the game was sweet when I played it.
Words.
It's probably the same sweetness now.
I know. I need to get that game.
Anyway, so Schizoid, we are going to have an interview next week with one of the main guys.
And we're going to be able to ask him how to pronounce it, right?
Are you for cereal?
I pronounce things how I like. You can ask him.
Schizophrenic? Is that how you pronounce
it? Schizophrenic? Yeah.
All right. Hey, to each their own.
It's personality. Okay. All right. So his name is Jamie Fristrom. Which we'll also find out if that's the way to pronounce his name.
Fristrom?
Fristrom.
All right.
We'll ask
First question, how do you spell your name?
Yes. And so we're really excited, and he's going to join us, and he's from Torpex Games, and Maker of Schizoid.
There's only one more week for you folks to submit questions to me to be used in the Family Feud PAX edition. So remember, Family Feud, go watch it on YouTube. Figure out how they ask questions. We want them relating to video games, relating to PAX, relating to nerdiness, relating to Mudkips, whatever. It's not related to specific games unless it's a game that absolutely everyone has played the world over many, many times. Like Braid. Like Braid. All right. We're going to be back next week talking to Jamie Fristrom. About Schizoid.
And I'm the name butcher.
Take some time between now and then to at least play the demo. The demo gives you a lot of gameplay.
Yes, it does.
One of the very few games where you can control two characters with a single controller. Kind of like Cookies and Cream on the PS2.
Very maddening.
Remember Cookies and Cream?
You can play both characters with one controller?
Yeah, I wouldn't advise it.
Yeah, you can.
Don't try it.
That's a mind.
That's the whole point of the game.
All right, good night, guys.
We'll be back next week. Bye.
You've been listening to Chatterbox Video Game Radio. Tune in next week for more tips and info in the latest and greatest in video gaming. And remember, all your base are belong to us.